You're listening to KBOO KBOO Portland. Next up is Transpositive with your host, Emma.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Stop the Climate Crisis and War on Tuesday, November 5th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Augustana Lutheran Church in Portland. Stop the Climate Crisis and War is a forum and panel discussion which will link the issues of climate change and war, update the community on U.S. belligerence in Iran and Venezuela, focus on the U.S.'s role in the war on Yemen and presence in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria, and more. Again, that's Stop the Climate Crisis and War on Tuesday, November 5th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Augustana Lutheran Church, 2710 Northeast 14th Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good evening and welcome to Transpositive. We've got a full house here tonight. My name is Emma and I use she and her pronouns.
This is Christine. I use she and her pronouns.
Hello, my name's Mars. I use she, her, and he, him pronouns.
And my name is Max Little and I use they, them pronouns and also he, him when I'm doing drag things like tonight.
Great. So we're here tonight. We've also got the whole many key organizers from the Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil who are going to be on in about 15 minutes. But first, we're starting with talking with the producers of WIG, which is a new trans drag musical that's opening November 7th here in Portland. And Mars and Max are here to talk to us about it. So Mars, Max, tell us what's going on.
Well, so WIG is a 21st century translation adaptation of Hair the Musical. So it's based on the 1968 musical Hair, and we've rewritten it and cast it entirely from local drag performers.
Nice.
Yeah, I think it feels really timely and important to do an update of the show. It's a show that's very meaningful to both of us, and this is our second time doing a sort of drag, queer, trans live musical. This year we started with an adaptation of Little Shop of Horrors back in April, which we called Little Punk Rock Drag Show of Horrors. And I think for both of us as trans folks, returning to musical theater and the sort of fundamentally queer art form in a way that's much more queer with what we're doing with it feels so important for a 2019 moment, especially with a show that in 1968 was so political and revolutionary, to take that and bring it to this moment and see those connections between what sort of changes needed to be addressed and brought about in that moment and how a lot of those are still the fights that we're fighting.
Wow, thank you. So let's get the details right off. Where is this going to be happening?
Well, it's at Blackwater Bar, which is in Lloyd Center neighborhood. It's a great little vegan punk bar. And we're doing it from, it's the 7th through the 10th, and there's 6 shows. So that's Thursday and Friday evening, and then Saturday, Sunday, both evening and matinees available. Tickets can be bought online. There'll also be tickets available at the door, but they might be tight. Shows at 8 p.m. and 1 p.m.
Great. Okay. So we've got the details. We'll do that again in just a couple of minutes. What inspired you? So you did your first show was the punk rock show. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, so Little Punk Rock Drag Show of Horrors, as we called it, because we love long titles, except for with Wig, apparently we don't. But we...
Wig, the translation, of Hair the Musical.
Oh, I guess that is long. We kind of discovered that the two of us shared a deep love for the musical Little Shop of Horrors. It's that classic musical that theater kids grow up being obsessed with. And for me, my dream was to always play Audrey. And when I met Max, we kind of discovered that their dream was that they always wanted to be Seymour. So it was a match made in heaven, and
made me see more.
And then so, yeah, we went forward from there. We decided to create our own reality and our own dreams, and then so we did it.
That's great. This is something that, I mean, part of this whole scene of like trans expression that's going on here in Portland in so many ways. I mean, there's so much amazing stuff happening right now here in Portland, and this is part of it. So Wig, what is revolutionary about Wig, and how are you like reshaping that? Like, what's different?
Yeah, so I think one of our big questions when we sat down to do a rewrite is so the Vietnam War is not the context that we're facing in 2019. That is the context of the original show Hair in 1968. And we really wanted to think through, like, what are the issues that our communities, like the queer and trans communities, and especially like queer and trans POC communities, are facing, and specifically like in a Portland context. So we wanted to address things like anti-blackness in the queer community and like undoing that. We wanted to address like the effects of the prison industrial complex on our communities and like the need to dismantle that, housing justice, accessing healthcare, especially as trans folks. So really bringing all of those issues that are still like so related to those 1968 moments, but like in their sort of like present forms, into the rewrite. So we've set the rewrite not in the sort of like Central Park like hippie group, but within a troupe of drag performers themselves. So it's really sort of like focused on our communities and what our communities are doing in that rewrite. So there's a lot of sort of like nonfiction elements coming into it. And I think one of the things that's really beautiful about the way that we've cast it as well is that it really is like drawing from a lot of different parts of the like trans and queer performance community and the drag community here in Portland. Like, we have a member of the House of Flora, a member of the House of Ada, and a member of the House of Olivier in the cast.
Wow. Oh yeah. My goodness.
So there's like a beautiful little ball moment in the song. If you're familiar with the show, the song Ain't Got No is in our version, it's a sort of like Kiki Ball moment between those three folks in their roles. So really like bringing the diversity of our like drag and performance community in Portland into conversation with these sort of like systems of oppression and how we fight those through our art. And really like, how are we like surviving and thriving under a really precarious like moment of capitalism that we're all kind of like up against together.
Wow, it sounds like a Technicolor explosion of fabulousness and intellectualism in the same moment.
Very much so.
I might take that and make it the tagline.
That's great. Yeah. That's really good.
Oh my goodness. How are you dealing with like doing drag king and drag queen and trans drag all like in the same space?
Are you doing that? Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, uh-huh. I don't consider it a reconciling so much, because it's really just part of our community of Eastside Portland drag queens. I say Eastside, I mean our community is all over the place. We just there tends to be sort of within the Portland drag scene, there's sort of like smaller groups, and in this group that we're in, even with overlap, it's so very trans and it's very gender fluid, almost naturally, and that's very supported by our communities. And it really hasn't been an issue in Portland like I hear about in other places. You know, people of all sort of gender presentations get representation here in Portland in a pretty big way, and I think our cast, well, I know our cast very much highlights that diversity. Almost, I would say 3/4, if not more, of the cast is trans or gender diverse identifying in some way.
How are you working with issues of like POC representation? Are you letting that like POC folks like do their own like everything, or are you like, I mean, how's that working?
Yeah, no, I super appreciate that question, especially because we are here as two white producers on this show, and it's a show that really, in its original context and the way that we're updating it, is centered around issues of race and like countering anti-blackness and white supremacy. And so we brought on from the beginning collaborator Lala Benet, who is really amazing drag queen here in town and a member of the House of Flora, to both play the role of HUD and to really like be a central part of the rewrite. And make sure that like we were doing the work alongside with her to address those issues of race in a way that like felt real for her and the other POC folks in the cast. And yeah, I would also add that the way that we do the rewrites is like also very involving everyone in the cast. So like we'll bring generally what we're thinking of in terms of rewrites, and we'll do some of it like pretty specifically so as to not put all of the labor on them, but we like leave as much space as possible for people to sort of reimagine their characters and to bring their drag persona into whatever character they're playing.
Great. We're talking with Mars and Max. You're listening to Trans Positive PDX here on KABU, and Mars and Max are co-producing a wig, the musical trans drag, November 7th to the 10th. And remind us again, where is it going to be?
It's at Blackwater Bar in Northeast Broadway. It's like 9th and Broadway. And it's going to be every night from the 7th through the 10th, and also two matinee shows on Saturday and Sunday.
And if they're looking for it online, can they find out information online about it?
Absolutely. There's a Facebook event page if you type in Wig the Musical, but you can also go to wigthemusical.brownpapertickets.com. and buy your tickets.
Now, do you have like a remake of Hair? Because it's like everybody knows Hair.
Oh, the song? Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we actually kept the original song Hair.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah. There's a few songs in the musical that we kept original, and that felt so classic that we kept that one. But there's a lot of really great, smart rewrites in there. I think especially in context of a trans radio show, my favorite is there's a song called Initials, and we rewrote it very heavily featuring the Youth of America on HRT. And that's my favorite little
LSD.
yeah, the original was LSD, so that was really fun for all of us to play with.
Oh, that's so great. Are you gonna put out like an album or some kind of a, like, are you going to release some kind of recording after it's done?
It's been talked about, and we're definitely going to look into it. Absolutely.
Oh, that's great. Do you have like a musical, like do you have people playing with you too? Or are you using soundtracks? How are you doing that?
Yeah, we have a live 3-piece band.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, all crammed into this tiny, amazing punk bar. So come out and see what that's like.
It just sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Do you talk, so what, one of the, like the, in the original, like Hair is like, we've done a whole bunch of shows about Hair. Do you talk about Hair from the perspective of like, I mean, all the different ways that it has meaning for us as trans folks or as non-binary folks, and how our bodies, like how we live with the reality of hair or whatever it means.
There is actually a scene that pretty directly references that, I'm kind of a co-star of that scene, because as a trans person who really goes all over the spectrum with my gender presentation a lot, but also has a lot of body hair. That is a reality for me that I actively face. So we do. It's more of a comedic scene, but we comedically, but poignantly address like that that body hair can be feminine, and that you know, you can experience gender euphoria as someone feeling like a woman but still having a mustache.
I love gender euphoria. That's like, I just love that word.
Me too.
So much.
Absolutely, yeah. And I feel like
go ahead.
To that, I think like that moment with that rewrite of the scene that leads up to the song Hair really is getting at, also to return to your question about like drag queens, drag kings, like trans drag, all of that. I think one of the big messages of our rewrite of the show is that all drag is valid, and that like all gender expressions and the way that we live our lives, like those things are all valid. So I think especially with the question about hair in a show originally called Hair that we're now rewriting his wig, like that feels so important to be like one of those main messages.
Wow, that's great. Is there any plans for something further than just November 10th with us? Taking it on the road or...
Well, my co-producer is sitting here nodding. I was about to say no. maybe they have a plan that I don't know.
I mean, I would love to take it on the road.
But oh, for sure.
We need to... We'll see when, but I think like our cast is so amazing and has put in so much work to make this like truly unique thing that it would be so great to like take it to other parts of the Pacific Northwest and really like share what is unique about Portland drag with other cities in the area. So I would love to see that happen.
Thank you. This has been so great talking to you. So again, WIG, one more time, remind us, where is it playing?
It's at Blackwater Bar on November 7th through 10th.
November 7th through 10th. And if people want to find out more, go ahead, Christine.
I was just going to ask, how much are tickets going for?
Great question. We have sliding scale, $15, $25, and $35 options, depending on your financial stability level. We're also doing No One Turned Away for Lack of Funds. In the ticket website, I have an email there. If you want those tickets, I would love to be emailed so I could make sure to have y'all counted and taken care of in that way.
Great. So that's WIG. You can look for it on Facebook, or just head on down to the bar.
Yep.
November 7th through the 10th. Great. Thank you so much for being on Transpositive. Thanks for taking some time to share this amazing show with us. I really look forward to seeing it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We're going to do if we can do two breaks. So we're going to do two breaks while we move into the next part of our show. You're listening to Transpositive PDX here on KBOO. And we are back. Welcome to Transpositive. We are here today. We have a full house, and I just want to thank everyone that's here. We're going to go around one more time to do introductions. We have several organizers and participants from the Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil, which is happening on Sunday, November 17th at First Unitarian Church. And it is not the only TDOR event happening. There's several TDOR events happening, including the Transgender Day of Resilience, which is also being organized by the Sankofa Collective, and that's going to be November 20th. So that's a great event. I totally encourage you to please go check that out. That's the Transgender Day of Resilience, and that's being organized by the Sankofa Collective. But this is the folks who are doing the Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil, which again is going to be November 17th at the First Unitarian Church downtown. So we're going to go around and first do introductions again one more time, and then we're going to get into talking about TDOR and what it means with some of the participants here. Again, my name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Arielle Stone. I use she and her pronouns.
Reverend Bill Sinkford, I use he and him pronouns.
Christine Watts, I use she, her pronouns.
Steve Cromer, I use he and his pronouns.
And I'm Reverend Mira Mitchkevich, and I use they, them, or she, her pronouns.
Great, thank you. I'd like to start by first talking to Mira, because Mira is, you're kind of the... you're sort of the MC of the events that night. Could you talk to us a little bit about what's going to be happening and why are we doing this event?
Sure. So this event has been going on for a few years now, and our current vision around it is to bring together lay and ordained faith leaders from various faith communities around Portland to offer three main things. One is to honor and memorialize transgender people who have died in the past year, especially due to violence against trans folks. The other is to offer a space that welcomes people of all gender identities to come together in a spiritual space together and to build some resilience for our community work toward liberation. And the last is to show some of the faith communities in Portland that are affirming and celebrating and welcoming of trans folks, particularly for trans folks who are looking for a spiritual home when they may have not been able to participate in other faith communities in the past.
Great. Now, this event has been going on for a while, and I know, Steve, you've actually been in on this event since the beginning. Can you talk a little bit about the history of the organizing of this event since you've been here since the beginning?
Sure. It kind of started with the thought that organized religion has often been persecutors of trans folks, and that we didn't want to be part of that. We wanted to change that trend. So this idea kind of evolved, and you were part of it. And I'm just really excited that this will be the third year, different iteration, a different faith community hosting. It feels really good that it's moved and grown, and that we are at the place we're at right now.
Reverend, is it Reverend Bill?
It is.
Reverend Bill. So the event is moving this year to the Unitarian Church. Why did the First Unitarian Church want to host this year, and how does the mission of Transgender Day of Remembrance like fit into your mission as a faith community?
Absolutely. We are, first thing to say is that we are just very privileged to be able to host the event this year. We've hosted other events in the past, but we're delighted to be hosting this one. It is central, actually, to our religious life, to understand that each and every one of us are already loved and already lovable, and to want to be able to express that for a community that is in trouble, is being attacked on a regular basis. Feels like it's very central to our mission, an expression of our mission as a faith community. So it's deeply privileging for us, and we hope that it can be an opportunity for us, along with other faith leaders and other faith communities, to let trans folks know that not all faith communities are their enemies, that actually we hope that we can be a welcoming home for as many trans folks as find our community an attractive and welcoming place. That's our goal. Mm-hmm. That's what we do.
Thank you. Rabbi Ariel, you're speaking at the event again this year. You were there last year. How does your tradition address the concerns of trans folks, and how does your congregation serve the needs and interests of the trans community?
So first of all, I'd just like to say that while I feel honored to be part of the observance, I feel also deeply sad that we have to have such an observance. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to be focusing, and Mira and I were talking about the fact that we're going to be focusing this year on trying to make sure that the event is not just about here's what my faith tradition believes, and here's how we're inclusive and affirming. We're saying that by being there. We're there to mourn. And we're there to bear witness to the violence in our society that claims innocent lives. Jewish tradition is very clear that all human beings are created in the image of God. Actually, I'd go farther and say that all life reflects the divine. And so it's not a departure for liberal Judaism, such as what I represent, to state that. We just state it, I guess, a little bit more loudly. But part of me really believes that if you could dig down past the politics in religious organizations and get down to the heart of every religious message, if it's true to the belief that there is a value to creation and a holiness to creation, then at the very heart of every human existence is a spark of holiness, which is exactly the same as every other spark. I deeply believe that my congregation has been happily somewhat successful in broadcasting that message in a welcoming way, mostly through the study we do together. And it's a delight, really, to look around the room on a Shabbat morning when we have 50 or 60 people in the room and see all of the glorious diversity of God's creation sitting in that room and asking awkward questions.
So how, for this is kind of an open question for any of you. A lot of people feel like religion, especially in the trans community, so many of us have been rejected by our faith tradition and feel like we're judged specifically because we are transgender or non-binary. How can people feel safe in a space that's rejected them? How can people feel safe coming into a sanctuary? What can the traditions do to help make people feel like they're welcome or that there might be a reason for them to be there?
I'm happy to take a crack at that. I wanted to build on what you said, Ariel, in terms of a group of people coming together and asking hard questions, asking the important questions. For First Unitarian, we have been trying to be a welcoming community for people of all gender expressions and all sexual orientations for some time. And so we've been at it for a while, and we know that we are not there yet. There are still things that we need to learn. There are still changes that we will need to make in the welcome that we can offer. So I wanted to be clear about that. We don't. Our excitement at hosting this has nothing to do with our thinking we are the perfect community, because we're not. But we are committed to working toward it. And so I think members of the trans community should look for signs. You know, what kind of worship is offered? What kind of programming? What does the building look like? So we are a welcoming congregation. That's the Unitarian Universalist special program around BGLTQ issues. We have been that for a long time. So that's prominent in our NARTHA, in our lobby. You look for signs. And I know that it takes real courage for anyone who is not a member of a religious community to decide to get up and show up, especially if you don't know someone who's already a member there and you're not being accompanied. So we try to be very mindful that the folks who come and visit us are exhibiting acts of courage when they walk through the door.
Mm-hmm. If I could, Steve, follow through on that. I'm a member of Portland First United Methodist Church, and we helped start the event. And like you said, Bill, we are not there. We have been in our word for it is a reconciling congregation. And we were a reconciling congregation starting in 1993, when the whole idea was a lot more controversial. And we absolutely lost members of the church when that decision was made. Fast forwarding to the event, the thing I think that has been really impactful to me is that when I've been welcoming people to the event, I've watched with some sadness and also some joy, people, trans folks who have heard about the event and are interested, and they come and they see a great big church and they walk back and forth and it just doesn't feel like they can come in. And then I've seen people who have come in and peeked inside the church and then just couldn't do it either. But that was a lot less last year. The first year, we had a nice service and a reception afterwards, and people were gone in minutes. Last year, the reception went on and on, and you could just sense that people felt much more welcome and much more relaxed in the space. And I think that's how it happens, is having experiences and to keep making those experiences, having the community keep creating those experiences.
Mira?
Yeah, and I'll say too that along the lines of anytime someone comes to a new faith community, it's an act of courage. Many faith communities right now are figuring out what their next steps are going to be. And so looking for a place that is open to changing with the new people who come in, I think is a huge aspect of welcome. That, you know, as maybe one of the younger people at this table, I know so many other millennials who are yearning for spiritual community and just not quite sure how to make it fit in their lives and how to find other people who resonate with them in that search. And some of the most wonderful things that I've seen lately in faith communities have come from people who are pretty new to the community saying, hey, this almost fits what I'm looking for, but I'd really love if we could have a young adult group, or I'd really love if we could have a trans group here, or I'd really love if we could have more programming about this topic. And that what I've seen is that there are a lot of congregations who are open to growing together and to joining in that, asking those questions together.
Do any of your churches or synagogues offer services, any kind of services specifically for trans, non-binary, or queer folks? Do you have, special services or programs or topics that kind of address those communities?
Well, of course, there's Pride Weekend, and yes. So Pride Shabbat is a lot of fun. and a couple, 2 years ago, we did a Friday night dinner that was just an amazing event. So a lot of joy. And as you know, because you were involved in it, Emma, we have done a queer Seder. But at my congregation, Shir Tikva, it's also, I guess I'd like to say that some of the things that animate the trans community in my experience, it are the kinds of social justice issues in which we're exploring intersectionality, we're exploring where we fit with other marginalized communities. And so one of the things that's been very attractive, I think, for the trans Jews that are part of Shir Tikva is the fact that we're all downtown, or that we're all involved in seeing members of the congregation who are allies being involved in the Pride Parade or the trans gatherings or going. Actually, I will say also that I've been told by a trans member of my congregation that he very much appreciates the fact that I'm down there at ICE screaming that they need to be shut down, where he doesn't feel safe to be there. Mm-hmm. And that he really appreciates the fact that he's part of a community with enough diversity in it, that some of us do this and some of us do that, and all of us are together in that desire for justice, and we're able to address it more effectively when we're all together across a variety of identities.
Thank you. Reverend Bill?
Yes, I think that's very important. I think the trans, the intersectional issues are First Unitarian is a justice-making church. That's part of our identity. And people who want to be members of our church are interested in being a part of a community that is out there on a whole range of issues. We do offer some trans space and some BGLTQ space. We have an active pride group, and we do those things and are happy to. It's also part of our mission to do education for the cis members of our congregation, who are the significant majority. And so we do a significant amount of programming, of an educational nature, try to bring folks who need additional information and exposure, to bring them along so that there's a greater greater sense of authentic, not only welcome, but also enough knowledge to make that welcome real in some significant way. And as I said, we're still at work at this.
Christine, I just want to ask you, since you're here with us tonight, you're guest hosting for the first time, how do some of these issues like mesh with you, like from your perspective personally?
Well, I know when I look at any place where I haven't been before, I typically look for a pride flag or a trans flag or something that says LGBTQIA safe space. So I'm just wondering, do any of you have like any kind of trans flags or pride flags? Or
yeah, prominently space? Displayed. Mm-hmm. You bet.
Cool. Cool.
What about for like disability rights issues? Like, would you like to ask the churches while they're here, since you're a disability rights advocate, about that?
Yeah, yeah. How's everyone's wheelchair access?
It's complicated at First Unitarian. We are accessible. Our worship spaces are accessible. Our campus is a whole block, and there are old buildings and new buildings at different levels and so on. But the worship spaces we have made accessible with elevators and appropriate signage. Although there too, we're still at work. We have work to do there too.
Yeah, at First Methodist, we are accessible basically, but there are spaces that are not as accessible as we'd like them to be. If I could talk just a little bit about how we all get better, how we all do better, just with an anecdote. One of our members, who is also a member of our planning group, as they're transitioning, expressed an interest in coming out publicly or making a public declaration. And so the conversation came around baptism, which of course is, you know, a big part of the Christian tradition. And in consultation with our senior pastor, determined that they were already baptized, and God knows who that person is and has always known who that person is. So we had a renaming ceremony in front of the entire congregation. And like you said, Bill, it's an education process. People come from all parts of the spectrum. There's no doubt that there were people in the congregation that were uncomfortable, and there were people who were saying, why did this take so long, and everything in between. And so we're all a work in progress, I think is fair to say.
Would you like to talk, Mira?
Well, just in terms of the disability rights stuff, like Rabbi Ariel was talking about, that's one of the intersectional issues that I think a lot of the more liberal congregations are looking into. And I know just today there was a staff conversation at First Unitarian about how to make language and signage and so forth more accessible and more welcoming to people of varying abilities. And, you know, rolled into that is also body liberation and sizism and all kinds of other intersecting oppressions that just like in any other community are at play in faith communities. And that, you know, to me, part of the really exciting work of being a person of faith and of being a faith leader is getting to accompany people along that journey. And even just now, I notice in myself my tendency, I was about to say, to walk with people in that journey. And it's unlearning some of those tropes that might seem inconsequential, but you know, we know about how representation is important and how language is important. And so I guess my feeling on it is like, we know that faith communities are imperfect communities just like any other place. What I really love about them is that most people I find are showing up with an open heart and showing up wanting to do better, even if their ego gets in the way sometimes. And yeah, just being willing to do that work whenever they can. So
thank you. So we've only got about 5 minutes left. This has gone so fast. I just, first of all, I want to thank all of you again for coming down here tonight to talk about this and to, you know, kind of share your perspectives. The Transgender Day of Remembrance is a day of mourning. But it's also a day to, at least for this particular event, it's a chance to make connections between faith communities and gender non-binary, queer, trans communities. And you're obviously, you care enough about these communities to show up and to stand with us as we mourn. But religion right now in this country is this great gulf. It's this dividing line. And trans folks are actually put right on the middle of that dividing line. And what can your traditions do to reach across the aisle to the other side to help kind of pull those who are like using our bodies as a wedge to divide this country? What can you do? Is there anything that you can do to kind of pull them, since you're all in the same business, in the same tradition, in the same endeavor for whatever your tradition means? What can you do? Is there anything you can do to bring that gulf, Bridget?
You know, I think back to the time when we were all struggling toward marriage equality. Very different issue, different dynamics. But it was really the courage and the willingness of gay and lesbian folks, willing to be out and proud and known, that ultimately made the difference. But there was a role for progressive religious communities as well, to stake out territory which said that the conservative religious folks who do use marginalized folks and misuse them and kill them do not have a monopoly on the religious voice. And so we can do that. It's an advocacy role. Reaching across the lines, reaching across the borders, is some of the hardest work we have to do. We keep trying to find common ground. If I had a simple answer, we'd be moving toward the beloved community a lot faster than we are.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that all of us share in the Western religious traditions is the certainty of the prophetic voice. There is no one who has a monopoly on it. Isaiah said, "Let justice roll down as waters." We can quibble a little bit about justice, but one of the things I find really effective is that I am able to sit at a table with rabbis across the spectrum in the Oregon Board of Rabbis, and so I can very easily turn to one of my colleagues and speak up in ways that are gentle and nuanced and use our shared language to make the point that, yeah, we're all human beings here, right? And so I find that to be a very effective thing to do, not always screaming and yelling and quoting Isaiah, although I do enjoy that, but also the very important work, which is so similar to any other kind of ally work. It's also fun to look around the Board of Rabbis table and see how many of us are directly connected or are ourselves part of the ever-growing awareness of the idea that the simple shorthand of male-female is really an injustice to at least to Jewish tradition, which knows anciently of multiple genders and gender expressions. And so it's very easy to point out, yeah, okay, I know what the halacha, the Jewish law, says right now, but you and I know that there's a more complicated conversation. And very often that does bring out the compassion. And you get a sense that people who are caught in a more conservative politic feel that it must grow.
Thank you. That'll have to be the last word. I'm so sorry. But it's been so nice having you all here. We're here tonight with Rabbi Ariel Stone, with Reverend Bill
Sinkford.
We're Reverend Bill Sinkford with Steve Cromer and with Reverend Mira
Michkiewicz.
Michkiewicz from First Unitarian Congregation Sheer Tikva, First United Methodist Church downtown Goose Hollow, and you're kind of a freelancer right now.
Freelance, yeah.
Yeah, great.
Freelance minister.
Thank you all for joining us. Again, the Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil will be at 4 p.m. at First Unitarian Church. Do you want to share any other details about the event, Mira?
4 p.m. Sunday, November 17th at the First Unitarian Church in our Elliott Chapel, and there will be a reception with a simple meal to follow that we can all join in community together.
Thank you. So we're going to take a quick musical break. Can we do two songs again, Somia? And then we're going to go to an interview with Gwendolyn Smith, who started Transgender Day of Remembrance. Thank you all for joining
Thanks,
us tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Man, I'm out in Texas. Man, I'm out in A-Town. Then I'm up in Chi-Town. Or Miami shutting down. It's that New Orleans. It's L.A. or the Bay. It's New York, Philly. And that whole DMV. I'm a Detroit player. Man, it's North-South Cat. Ohio, Pittsburgh. Got St. Louis on deck. It's Delaware, Connecticut. It's New Jersey. Got hella It's Queens, Brooklyn, and yeah, they rallying. Bronx, Harlem, and Staten.
We're here today with Gwendolyn Ann Smith. Hello, Gwendolyn.
Hi. Thanks for having me today.
So, Gwendolyn, we're talking to you today about the Transgender Day of Remembrance and your role in helping to start Transgender Day of Remembrance. Can you first of all tell us what is the Transgender Day of Remembrance?
Well, the Transgender Day of Remembrance is an event I started in 1998 with the goal of highlighting the issue of anti-transgender violent murders and how many there are and who it's affecting. At the time, what had happened, Rita Hester, who's a trans woman who was in Boston, was murdered in 1998. And the evening after the murder, I was speaking with some Boston area trans activists I knew. And so it really struck me that the community itself had no kind of historical knowledge of the issue of anti-trans violence and how it was affecting our community. So I set out to research that. In the course of the research, I discovered just how large an issue it was, and that this was something that needed to be addressed, which led to the Day of Remembrance.
That, I find that very enlightening, actually, because as it's viewed today, TDOR tends to be a more outwardly focused event, and that it initially was conceived to inform within our community.
Right. And certainly the Brandon Tina case was a large portion of where we started. I mean, that was a case that was still very active at the time of the start of Day of Remembrance, 20 years of TDOR at this point. And as, you know, growing as a community from being a very isolated community when we started this project to where we are now, those of us who are in the community, we know now that there's an issue.
Exactly.
We know about our violence. So if we were continually still focusing it inward and saying, oh, no, we need to be aware of it ourselves, we know. Now it's time to tell everyone else. Now it's time to make an issue of it outside the community.
Do you remember the very first Transgender Day of Remembrance commemoration? Can you tell us what that was like? The one that you
I think I might still have a cold from that one. It was a very, very cold and rainy night in San Francisco. And it was about a little bit less than 100 of us in SF on Castro Street, holding up signs with the names of the people we knew that had been killed at that time. And that one was actually, that was in March rather than November. And it was coinciding with a showing of the Brandon Tina story at the Castro Theater. So, yeah, I remember that one. I spoke to the crowd. I stood in the middle of Castro Street and spoke to everyone gathered in front of the Castro Theater about the importance of our lives.
And do you know how many Transgender Day of Remembrance commemorations there are now annually?
You know, I wish I did. There's hundreds, potentially thousands at this point. We try to collect as many of them we can through the website, tdor.info. But there's a lot more events that happen that we never hear about that don't contact us. We don't require that people tell us they're having events. You know, it went from being, you know, a very small thing to something that is honored internationally.
I'd like to hear your comments on the effect of TDOR on the broader picture of actually gathering statistics on the violence internationally.
It has vastly changed in the way that the data has been collected over the years. From, you know, the early days of the project, it was literally just me pouring through newspapers and people sending me reports and stuff like this. A lot of that's changed to this day, and with more awareness, you're seeing more people tracking it and a broader sharing of information. Again, at the time that was started, there wasn't really a notion of social media that really hadn't really caught on. So the information's been pulled a lot stronger at this point.
It's really helping us to see that violence against trans women and trans people is especially impacting to trans people of color. Could you comment on that?
Yeah. You can't talk about anti-trans violence without talking about that it disproportionately affects people of color. It disproportionately affects trans women. It disproportionately trans younger individuals. It's simply not, you know, it was very easy, I suppose, in the beginning of the project to think, well, this is strictly, you know, we're talking strictly about anti-trans murders. Even looking in the face of you know, a project that was originally started with the notion of both Rita Hester and Chanel Pickett, who are both black trans women. As time has gone on, as more data has come in, this is not just a trans issue. This is an issue that affects primarily trans women of color.
It seems like we're starting to develop kind of a culture of, you know, kind of embracing our own power as trans people. So Transgender Day of Remembrance really holds an important place within that set of, you know, I don't know what you would call it, maybe rituals. Do you think that this is something that we need to continue to do into the future, you know, to acknowledge this brutality against trans people, like within our own communities? Is this something that we're going to need to do every year, like into the future?
You know, it's long been my hope that someday we'd actually see Transgender Day of Remembrance become, you know, a quaint notion, a fixture of the past where we weren't being killed in the same ways we're being killed, and yet we're not, and yet we still see, you know, numbers remaining at best even, or in the last couple of years rising, as far as trans deaths. So I think it still is, you know, a part of our landscape, as well as these other events. And you know, you mentioned culture. I'm very glad to see a culture growing and seeing events beyond just Day of Remembrance, seeing visibility, seeing, you know, I'd love to see, speaking of Pride, I'd love to see something that we do in August around the anniversary of the Compton's Cafeteria riot, or, you know, things like this where we really build that visibility and that community and that culture around trans issues. And yeah, this is part of that culture. And hopefully, you know, it's part of the culture for now. Hopefully in, you know, another 20 years or whatnot, the issue of trans violence won't be as pressing. But we'll see. I mean, the way things are going right now.
How do you decide what's an anti-trans crime and what's an anti-gay crime? And then how do you work with, you know, trying to sort out and flesh out language? For instance, when press calls trans women men or, you know, that sort of thing.
The latter part of that, it's very difficult because you end up in cases where they'll use birth names, birth genders. They won't provide any information whatsoever. there's a case, I've talked about this a couple of other times elsewhere, where even here in the San Francisco Bay Area, there was a murder a few years back of a trans sex worker, and a reporter contacted me directly because he wanted to cover the story, but his news affiliate wouldn't let him or didn't feel that it was relevant for him to cover it because it was a trans prostitute. Who cares? It, you know, they were murdered. You know, so you have a lot of cases out there that, quite frankly, we may never know about because if you're relying on the media to report them and they don't think it's a relevant story, it doesn't get covered.
So we've been speaking today with Gwendolyn Ann Smith, the founder of Transgender Day of Remembrance. And Gwen, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And that was Gwendolyn Ann Smith. She was the founder of we did that interview about 3 years ago. So Christine, you said this is your first show guest hosting. What do you think?
Well, a whole flood of emotions is hitting me. Like, this is a very very special day, and you know, we remember all the trans people that were that have lost their life. Yeah, very emotional.
Yeah, it really is. There's been like at least 20 so far this year that have been murdered, mostly.
Yeah, 23, I think, was 23. The last number I heard.
Yeah, and it's almost all trans women of color, mostly in the South and on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Baltimore, I think, has had like 3. Texas has had like 4.
Yeah.
Florida's had 3.
It's madness.
Yeah. It's horrible. So we're going to be remembering these people. And again, there's a really great event happening that week. It's a Transgender Day of Resilience that's going to be organized by Sankofa Collective. So that's going to be on the actual day of TDOR, which is November 20th. So I encourage you to check that out. If you want to come to the vigil, specifically kind of more for people, it's more of a religious kind of thing. That's going to be at First Unitarian Church on November 17th. At 4 p.m. There's a bunch of other events going on, I know. And then this trans drag show.
Yeah, that looks really fun.
Yeah, it's really neat. So anyways, thanks for guest hosting with us tonight, Christine. Yeah. What's new in your life? Anything you want to share that's going on with the...
Oh, geez. Well, we're still fighting TriMet, my club is. Never-ending battle with them. We're trying to advocate for a bike car on a TriMet max train so that we can take different kinds of bikes and trikes and quads and
The stuff we talked about.
Yeah,
great.
Basically open up access for everybody.
All right. Well, we will talk about that some more next show. You've been joined tonight. My name is Emma Lugo. I use she and her pronouns. And
this is Christine Watts. I use she and her pronouns.
And thanks so much for listening to Transpositive. We'll be back in 2 weeks with an interview with Paige Kreisman. Paige is running for District 42 of the Oregon State House. She's a transgender woman, so we'll have her on the next show. Thanks so much, and have a great night.
You are listening to KBOO, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM. We just listened to Transpositive PDX with our host, Emma. And next up is Calculated Conversation with David and Ken. This show has been pre-recorded.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Cause Cabaret While They Wait on Saturday, November 9th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge in Portland. Cause Cabaret, While They Wait, will be an evening of performances by various singers, storytellers, comedians, and dancers from the Portland area, and will benefit those attempting to legally immigrate to the U.S. The event will host raffles, food and drink, and music, and comedy performances. Again, that's Cause Cabaret While They Wait on Saturday, November 9th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge, 2432 Southeast 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Black Lives Masquerade on Sunday, November 10th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Multnomah County Central Library in Portland. Black Lives Masquerade is a dance-style documentary of the Community Engagement Project by the same name, which looks to reflect on taking back traditional ceremonies in current times, the process of healing in the Black community, and bringing awareness to police brutality, gun violence, and racial justice. Again, that's Black Lives Masquerade on Sunday, November 10th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Multnomah County Central Library, 801 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Facilities, cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist. I'm dropping flavor, my behavior is hereditary, but my